This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And that's me. Thank you so much. It's a beautiful Sunday, even if you want to be inside the WNRN studio. And I hope the folks at Levinson's 94.7 are also enjoying themselves. Let me thank the folks at Blue Ridge Graphics for allowing us to be on air today. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street here in Charlottesville. They provide custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. Go online, use that technology, brgtshirts.com. All right, speaking of technology, that's what we're going to be talking about today. We are going to be doing a program on parenting and technology. And I think I copied this from a recent seminar, From TV to Twitter. All right, let's introduce our guests. Ladies first, we have Nura Yingling. She is the upper school director at our local Tandem Friends School. Nura, please say hi.
Hi, everybody.
Thank you so much. Also in the studio, we have Tim Resch, who is a local parent of two teenagers and a tween. Tim?
Morning, Rick. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thank you so much for coming in. And Sean, on the phone line? Okay. Oh, not anymore. It went blank. The bluegrass. We will be talking with Dr. Yvonne Chen, who is a Virginia Tech Assistant Professor of Communication, who will be participating by phone. So Sean McCord will be ringing her up in just a moment. Because, Nura, there was a recent seminar put together, right, just in early November, at the Tandem School, I believe, where Dr. Chen gave a talk.
Yes, one of our Tandem parents this past summer came to speak with me, and she brought along a couple of the members of Women's Health Virginia who had sponsored a seminar earlier in the summer on just what you said, from tweens to Twitter. And the mom who came, it was Carolyn Merrick, one of our wonderful Tandem parents. She really wanted Tandem to be involved in a conversation about the role that media plays in the lives of our students. So we met with the folks from Women's Health Virginia, and listening to them talk about that particular seminar, they were especially impressed by Dr. Chen and what she had to say and the way she presented her research. So we invited her up to Tandem Friends. We opened the session to the whole community in the evening, and we were fortunate enough that that day, before she presented to the parents in our community, talking to them about media literacy among teens, she did separate presentations, one for our middle school students and one for our upper school students.
And tell me a little bit about, I mean, the program mm-hmm. Was it full of education? I mean, was it about parenting? Was it more towards the educators and the teachers, et cetera?
Yeah, those are good questions. The thing that was so great about that day is that the middle school presentation, she definitely had her audience in mind, and that she was talking to the kids in grades 5 through 8 about the role of media in advertising and the effects that media has on kids in advertising. And the teachers, of course, had a good ear out for some of the forces at work in young people's lives that we're not always so aware of. Then the upper school program that she presented was on what she called the digital dossier. And she presented just a great PowerPoint presentation that showed how whenever we are online, at the information that we put in, whether we're Googling something, there's a record kept of the sites that we Google. There's a record that is continually upgraded and responded to. Say if we have a Facebook page, you can see on your Facebook page on the right hand side certain kinds of advertisements, and based on the profile, the messages on Facebook, the Facebook people, we wonder, why is Facebook such a cool thing, so free? Well, it's used so that advertisers can specifically target different individuals. And so Dr. Chen wanted our students to be aware that whenever they go online, even if they delete something afterwards, it exists out there in the virtual world. So the notion of privacy is a very different notion than when you and I were 17 or 18 years old. So Dr. Chen again presented three presentations. The evening presentation for parents was what parents can do and what we need to know, what parents need to know about the world that their kids are inhabiting virtually that, again, many parents are unaware of.
And Dr. Yvonne Chen will be participating in the program in just a minute. Right now we have Nura Yingling, the upper school director from Tandem Friends School, and we also have Tim Resch, who's a local parent of several teenagers or near teenagers. Tim, Nura was talking about the fear, I guess. For me, it's a fear. That's not fair to attach on to everyone. But for me, it's a fear of everything you do always out there for somebody to find. There is no true privacy if you do it on a technological basis.
Yeah, Rick, I wish I could have been able to attend that seminar. And I'll probably after this, my wife and I will look and see if we can download some of those presentations from Dr. Chen's website or from the Tandem website if they're available. My wife and I, even though I'm in technology, technology covers a whole broad spectrum of stuff, and my wife and I seem to always be in a reactive mode with this stuff instead of maybe being more proactive because there's the technology keeps changing and there's different things to keep track of. As we were talking before the show, as kids, we had TV or the landline phone, and the landline phone was, you know, in the kitchen. And the TV was in the living room, so your parents always had access to what you were doing. You know, maybe with a book you could be in your bedroom. But now there's just so much with, and I have to, even myself, I've yet to tweet. I don't have a Twitter account, so the technology keeps changing and expanding that as a parent it's tough keeping up with everything.
Yeah, and I'm going to have another question or two about that in a minute. The parent who doesn't know how to use all the devices or systems that your kids are using. But let me bring Dr. Chen into the conversation. Dr. Chen, are you with us?
Yes.
Hi, Dr. Yvonne Chen, who's a Virginia Tech professor of communication, who gave, or I guess was the main individual involved in the recent seminar held at Tandem School. Dr. Chen, we were talking about, I guess, about the use of media. Let me start from the beginning. What is modern media now? Because for many people, television still qualifies because of how it's changed. But to me, having no children, TV isn't modern anymore. So give me the definition of what qualifies as modern media, so as I can have that in my head as we go throughout the hour.
So typically when researchers really try to define or try to study the potential negative effects of media on children, they typically still focus on TV content. And as you mentioned before, TV, you know, is so accessible now, even in some low-income family home. The first thing you could see when you visit their living room is the huge HD TV they could have in their living room. And what we need to know nowadays is, for children across different age range, what kind of new media are they using? And it's not surprising to actually find out that some toddlers might be savvier than their parents in terms of using iPad or iPod. And parents think that, you know, that's a great distraction tool, you know, so I can focus on shopping while my children are using iPod or iPad to focus, so they can focus on something while their parents finish shopping. In addition to that, a lot of adolescents are really using a lot of computers, and they might have computer in their own bedroom, which makes it relatively difficult for parents to monitor their use of laptop. In addition, video games is huge in adolescents' life as well. You might find out that for some adolescents' boy, they might be spending hours playing video games in their own bedroom on a typical day, and that might actually increase the amount of use during the weekend. And so even though researchers still focus on TV, we can definitely see that the use of computers, video games, and even their cell phones have definitely increased throughout these years.
We are talking about parenting and technology. On phone line is Dr. Yvonne Chen, a Virginia Tech professor of communication. In studio, we have Tim Resch, who's a local parent of several teenagers and near teenagers. And we also have Nuri Yingling, who's the upper school director at the local Tandem Friends School. Dr. Chen, I don't know if you noticed or had a chance to see this yet. It was pointed out to me that today's New York Times cover story in the technology section is about children and the heavy and increased use of technological media, such as the iPad, the cell phone, etc. I don't think there was anything through my glancing that was different from what I read about your seminar that you have recently given. But there's a question that I have is, you mentioned it as the toddler or the adolescent being somewhat savvier in the use of the piece of equipment that the parent may not use. The child able to use the television already, having their iPad or iPhone and using that, does the parent need to know how this device works and what it can be used for if they're going to let their child use it? And if not, how do you oversee it?
I personally definitely believe in that parents are unable to really restrict their children's media use unless they know how that particular piece of technology can be used to benefit or even to deter their child's development. So I'm definitely the proponent of, definitely understand if they are using Facebook, at least understand how many people are using Facebook, what's the basic functions of Facebook, and really understand what their children might be doing on Facebook in terms of communicating with their peers. However, for some parents who might not be familiar with technology as much or who might be too busy to really try to spend some time with technology, I would definitely think that trying to understand, for example, how filters, online internet filter, could be functioned as a monitoring tool, and so you can actually restrict your child's access to certain websites. Then you might feel like, I do not want my child to go on certain websites that could actually affect their development. Then I think that's a really great tool to use, is to really try to understand how to use those filter, online filter tool, email filtering tool, etc.
We are talking about parenting and technology, and we're doing that somewhat to the thanks of Dixon Disposal. They support NRN, and Dixon reminds you that you can reduce household garbage by purchasing products with reuse and recycling in mind. Small changes in your lifestyle can keep our planet green for years to come. And when Dixon's picks up your trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. Find them online at DixonDisposal.com. Back with our guests today, Dr. Yvonne Chen. We also have Nuri Yingling and Tim Resch in the studio. Tim, Professor Chen mentions overseeing what your children are doing and the need to at least have a basic understanding of the software and the device that they're using. Do you know how to use Facebook?
Yes, and I've only been using Facebook about 2 years because we had our a high school reunion, I forget which one, 35, 40, and they organized that through Facebook, and so I finally had to figure out how to get onto Facebook and do that. My children all have Facebook accounts, and we've made them a friend, both my wife and I, so we have access to what they're doing and who their friends are, not ironically, I guess, but my 14-year-old daughter had 300 friends when we first looked at it, and we were wondering how she could have 300 friends when neither one of us had 300 friends total over our lifetime. And it was not just friends, but it was friends of friends and friends and friends of friends. And I think my wife went through each of those friends and said, well, who is this? And if my daughter couldn't recognize who that person was, we defriended them. I think I just said this, that we have made the kids friend ourselves so that we're now have access to, you know, their news feeds and whatnot. So that's probably one recommendation, is make your kids friend you through Facebook. Another way of monitoring is we have two laptops in the house that the kids can use. One's in our study, which is a public room, and one's in our living room, which is also a public room. So it's not up in their bedrooms. Maybe once each kid over the past few years has taken it up to the room to do some research, but we pretty much monitor it by being available to see what they're looking at online.
Do you know how to Twitter, or do your kids Twitter? Do they have Twitter accounts?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do not know how to Twitter. I have yet to Twitter, but as far as I know, my kids don't. But that doesn't mean that they're not.
Dr. Chen, how does each parent stay in any way capable of overlooking these things as time moves along? I mean, we're talking today about modern media here in 2010, but if you want to go back to when any of us were children, my parents couldn't tell you where I biked to on a regular basis. I could say, oh, I'm going out to, you know, Ashby's house, but along the way I stopped at, you know, B.C. Smith's store and got a soda that my mother probably wishes that I hadn't gotten. Isn't it really just a matter of the modern changes in life that your parents are or are not capable of overseeing?
Well, I think that sometimes we do have to somewhat withdraw from trying to overseeing and trying to monitor your child's access, and then transform that idea into how about just talking to your child about their media use. And I think that once you parents are able to really discuss effectively with their child about what they're using, why they're using it, and what are some risks involving in posting your personal picture on Facebook, I think that children will be empowered to make a better decision for themselves next time when they're on Twitter trying to tweet about where they're at. They understand that, you know what, there are certain privacy issues associated with me tweeting this particular piece of information about myself online. And I think that talking to child about media is another way we can do to sort of make up for, you know, the time when, you know, parents just cannot simply keep up with the media anymore.
Sunday morning wake up call, 11:19. That's Dr. Yvonne Chen on our phone line, Virginia Tech Assistant Professor of Communication. Neera Yingling in the studio from Tandem Friends School. Tim Resch, who's a local parent of some teenagers. And we're talking about parenting and technology. Call us up if you have a question or a comment, 979-0919. And we will be doing that, bringing that in, and I'll be reading your question today. Let me do the weather real quick, and we'll come back to our guests. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. It's fair and sunny today. Highs about 60, lower 60s in Lynchburg. Partly cloudy tonight, lows in the mid-40s. Partly cloudy tomorrow, highs of about 69 degrees, breaking the 70s in Richmond. Right now, it's a beautiful day, 52 in the Valley, 53 in Lynchburg, 57 in Richmond, Richmond, 53 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let me remind you, if you didn't know, Thanksgiving is coming and the turkeys are back at WNRN. There are all natural free, free-range turkeys from Whole Foods Market. Turkeys raised with care and not chemicals. To win one, just stay tuned beginning Monday for your chance to call in and win a gift certificate good for a natural free-range bird for your holiday table or an equivalent value of other goods if turkey isn't your thing. Listen for the sound of the turkey gobble to become a winner only from Whole Foods Market and WNRN. And just a reminder, we're also supported by the Jefferson Theater, presenting Indecision on November 26th. In 1984, the Charlottesville band blazed the trail for other jazz-influenced rock and roll bands to come with music that focuses on grooves and improvisation. In 1993, Indecision gave up full-time touring but continues with yearly regional tours, and presently, Indecision is selecting tracks for the first CD in almost a decade. You can find tickets for Indecision on November 26th at jeffersontheater.com. All right, back to our guests on parenting and technology, Nura Yingling, Tim Resch, and Dr. Yvonne Chen. Nura, we're talking about parenting, but at the school, the teachers and the administration are the parents mm-hmm. for that time of day. What are the rules at Tandem, and do you know of any different rules at other area schools?
Well, those are great questions, and particularly as a school administrator, I and my colleagues are always trying to figure out how other schools are handling this continually changing, impossible to keep up with growth in our kids' relationship with media. And if I could just give a few bits of data that just might be useful for folks, the Pew Charitable Trust and the Kaiser Family Foundation have done some great studies on media use, and that data is really great. I know that my experience at Tandem Friends is not necessarily the same as other educators. So it's really useful for me to see what's going on in the country. Kids 8 to 18 spend 6.5 hours a day in front of the TV. And when you round out the fact that they're multitasking in front of the TV, on the internet, cell phone, texting, that's 8.5 hours a day. Kids are over 24% of young people are live in homes with more than 5 televisions. 2/3 of families have the TV on during their family dinner. Those kinds of statistics they're not the statistics we find in our community at Tandem, but they're statistics that I think all educators, regardless of where they teach, need to be aware of. So at Tandem Friends, to answer your question, we have, as a Quaker school, and even prior to becoming a Quaker school, we have a central ethos, which is freedom with responsibility. And by including the students in our conversations about how we teach and how we live together in community, we already have, I think, a leg up on exactly what Dr. Chen recommended, which is being in conversation with our students about their lives in and out of school. In terms of specific rules, we have very few rules in the upper school. As far as technology goes, in the middle school, the kids are not allowed to have their cell phones with them. They may leave them in their lockers and on occasion not bring them at all. In the upper school, we ask that students do not use their cell phones or iPods or laptops or any other form of media when we're in community gatherings. And that includes morning meeting every day when we gather together as an upper school community for announcements, celebrations, during our speaker series, which is an assembly every week. We get together a lot and talk about issues, certainly not in the classroom, and not during our quiet time, our meeting for worship in the middle of the week. So during the other times in the school day, in between classes, during students' free periods or study hall at lunchtime, we talk to the kids if we feel, and not just me, but the other adults in the community, if we feel that a student is isolating, spending more time in front of a little teeny screen in their pocket or in front of the a computer because we value community so much. That said, we're continually in discussion about where, if at all, we're going to have Wi-Fi on the campus, where we set up our computers for students, where and how we incorporate media into our teaching. And we have teachers at our school who go from they just want to sit under a tree with books or just sit under a tree with minds and souls. And then we have other teachers, of course, who are very facile, very savvy, and really use technology to the benefit of our students' learning, and I think most importantly, their humanity. I want to get back to one point you made about teachers and adults, parents and teachers knowing what our kids are doing. I really feel it's a responsibility of all educators to be able to not to get intimidated by the fact that our kids know more about technology than we do. And I think it's a danger that we somehow think that novelties are always good, and we need to remember what kind of consequences they may have. Overuse, careless use, uneducated, unmindful use to our humanity.
11:26 on the wake-up call. We are talking about parenting and technology. That was Nira Yingling, who's the upper school director at the Charlottesville Tandems Friends School. Tim Resch is in the studio. He's a parent of two teenagers and a tween, and Professor Yvonne Chen on phone line. She's a Virginia Tech Assistant Professor of Communication and who gave a recent seminar at Tandem on from TV to Twitter. Dr. Chen, as I was doing my homework, one of the things that I found was, and I hope I quote this properly, quote, media messages have a strong impact on kids' physical health, mental health, and overall well-being. I can understand the mental health part. What do the technology pieces and devices and software have to do with the physical health?
Oh, that's a great question. If we, let's discuss this in the context of obesity. And if we can include more piece of information on, you know, TV use and computer video games together in terms of technology in children's life. And so what we can see is, and it's pretty intuitive for all of us, when we spend so much time consuming media, watching TV, playing video games, it takes out a lot of time that children could potentially play outside of their home and being active. And so studies have shown that watching too much TV, for example, has been linked to obesity. And that clearly is a way that media use could potentially affect a child's negative sort of health status. And that definitely links to the physical health piece of media use.
Tim, we talk about, Dr. Chen mentioned, physical health in terms of overuse and obesity. But as a parent, how do you help prevent overuse in any means? You mentioned having the computer at your house in public space, but your kids have cell phones, correct?
That's correct.
They have the potential to text. How do you oversee the fact that these devices don't get in the way of homework, of being outside, of social interaction in other ways?
My wife and I strongly encourage, I'll talk about the kind of the physical activity thing that Dr. Chen talked about, is we strongly encourage our children to do something each season for sports. So my son typically plays football at Western Albemarle, or basketball, or baseball. My daughters play field hockey. So each season we want them out. We don't care what it is; they have to be doing something. It doesn't have to be a high school sport. It could be, you know, little league baseball or Girl Scouts, or they need to have some other activity besides school that they're involved in that has hopefully some physical aspect to it. Another thing we do is kind of like a tandem. We set up between 6 and 8 p.m. No screen time. And 6 to 8 usually includes dinner, and certainly there's no screen time during dinner. We don't have the TV on. We don't allow the phones at the table. It was funny, when my son first got his phone, he had it on vibrate, I guess, and during dinner time he answers the phone, hello, you know, and he starts having a conversation right in the middle of dinner. So we've canceled that
Isn't it awful for the other kids when one sibling ruins it for everyone else?
Yes, so the two older ones are in high school, and they each have phones, and the younger one is just dying to have a phone. She's in sixth grade now. She's 11. And the rule at our house is at 13 you can get a cell phone.
What makes you choose that age? I have someone, again, preparing for today's program, Tim Resch speaking now, being a local parent of two teenagers and a tween, who was talking about how her 10-year-old is just, you know, constantly plucking at her, asking for the cell phone, and when can she get it? But what makes you choose the age of 13?
13 seemed to be the age with my son and my older daughter when they had a lot of activities and they weren't necessarily taking the bus home, you know, the regular bus home, so they would need to coordinate some kind of transportation with my wife or I or with somebody else. And so it just it was almost more for our convenience than for theirs that they have a cell phone that's, that we'd be able to reach them.
Nura Yingling from Tandem Friends School, is there an age that you see at the school where as they move from the lower school to the upper school that the percentage grows drastically, or, you know, do you see a community, or certainly at least from Tandem Friends community, where there seems to be an age of approval where the parent says, yes, now you can have a cell phone, net yes, now we'll open up the technological media to you?
Well, I think in that way Tandem is probably representative of the country, because we have lots of different parents with lots of different parenting styles, and I would say that there are some 17-year-olds who may not be so wise in using a cell phone, where another 14-year-old might. I don't know so much if it depends on age. I think, you know, I admire you, and I wish more parents were like you, Tim and your wife, as far as being really mindful about when you give a child a phone. I don't know that the actual age is important so much as what's the conversation between the parents and the child, what's the function of the telephone, what's the child's life like. 13 sounds like kind of a good sort of baseline age to me. In some of the research that I was reviewing, I noticed that kids around the tween age, I guess we're talking about 11 through, I don't know what, 10, 11, 12, that those young people who do not have any monitoring of their use of technology tend to be the most at risk for isolation, low self-esteem. And, you know, it's sort of, you know, which comes first? Is fleeing into the world of magical fantasy identity on the computer a result of isolation or loneliness or depression, or is it the other way around? I don't really know. What I'm really appreciative of hearing from you, and again, I wish all parents were as thoughtful and careful. And I think, you know, Rick, you started the conversation today with parents being, quote, too busy, unquote. And if we were going to look at kind of a root problem or a root concern about kids and media and our own relationship with media, we look at that busy word. You know, I tried this past year not to use the word busy at work, just to see what it would do. And it's impossible not to use the word busy in our lives. This multitasking, this constant, you know, the article in the New York Times this morning, the front page, the title was Growing Up Digital, Wired for Distraction. And that word distraction, not to mention all the research, it's even referenced in that article about how media use is rewiring brains, particularly the plastic brains of our young people. I have so many more questions than answers here. And again, as an educator, I think it's important to ask the questions and to ask the questions with our kids.
We are talking about parenting and technology. Our guests, Nura Yingling, Tim Resch, and Dr. Yvonne Chen, who's participating by phone. Dr. Chen, I feel like that I've sort of dragged the program into the negative part of what these media options are. So this is a two-part question. When is, are there any numbers showing time spent using these media, you know, the iPad, the iPhone, and all the other devices that seem to be much more modern and available to today's high school students? So are there any figures spent comparing the time using these with the grades in school, and whether that makes it, you know, however that works, is a better or worse comparison? What are some of the positive things that go along with having these available?
Well, let's talk about the negative side, negative use of the media, the use of, you know, media that leads to some negative outcomes. And I think that researchers in academia tend to focus on the negative side of it. And I have to admit that that's basically what people pay attention to some extent, that they will talk about whether or not the violence use of media would, you know, make people more aggressive, or whether watching too much TV makes people fat. So in terms of the first part of the question you asked, whether or not the use of media affects school grade, according to Kaiser Family Foundation that surveyed 8 to 18-year-old, what they have found is actually definitely time spent with media negatively impacts school grade. So what they did is they actually separate all of the 8 to 18 years old into three different groups. One group is low media use, the second group is moderate media use, and then the third group is the heavy media use. And they did this comparisons among these three groups of students, and what they have found is that for light users, those people who consume very little media, at least 66% of them get good grades according to their self-report. And 23% of them get pretty fair or poor grades. But when it comes to moderate media use, light media users, like I mentioned before, at least 66% of them get good grades. But then when it comes to moderate media use, now the number is somewhat flips to 65%. It's not significant. But then when it comes to heavy media users, only 51% of them get good grades. And that's a pretty significant drop from light media use, 66% of them get good grades, as opposed to heavy media users with only 51% of them getting good grades at school. So you can definitely see that maybe spending too much time with media really take all the time that they could spend in studying or in preparing for their school homework, and that in turn affects their school grade. However, it's never really, you know, we're not really doing media any justice by only talking about the negative side of the media. And I personally think that there are lots of positive use of media. For example, in terms of Facebook, children may feel like they are connected with their friends all the time. And that they might potentially promote a sense of interpersonal connectedness with their friends. And I think that for that side of the technology, new technology, and how that could impact a child's life in a very positive way is actually not very well studied just yet. We want to talk about some positive use of media. We can talk about the Sesame Street, Blue's Clues. Those a lot of programs that prepare children for school readiness. And what studies have shown that for Sesame Street, it really does promote children's understanding of the language, symbol, numbers, letters, and the relationship that they have with their surrounding environment. And empirical evaluations have found that even after a few years later, they assessed the same group of children who watched Sesame Street, and they found out that those children indeed were more prepared for school than those children who didn't watch as much Sesame Street. And one thing that I think it's very interesting for researchers like me who think that, you know, we really need to pay attention to who needs these kind of positive programming more. You know, what we have found out, according to the researchers have shown that for disadvantaged children growing up in a low-income family, after watching Sesame Street, these children learned a lot more than children who grew up in a middle-income family home but watched very little Sesame Street. So what we found out that even for heavy media user, but then when they watch positive programming, it does facilitate their learning process in a way that we could not imagine that, you know, the TV could do to a child. So I think that that's something that's, you know, the positive user media that people should, you know, still pay attention to, because you just never know that people do get satisfaction from, you know, watching certain shows or connecting with their friends on Facebook or even just showcasing their status, you know, updates on Facebook or Twitter.
11:41 here on the Wake Up Call as we talk with Dr. Yvonne Chen, Virginia Tech Assistant Professor of Communication. Nuri Yingling is here from the Tandem Friends School. Tim Resch, a local parent of some teenagers using their media and trying not to be distracted by that. Be right back with our guests.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, whether they fear a food supply breakdown or simply have a love for chickens, more and more city folks have birds in their backyard. And The Hook takes a look. Are you naturally shy? The Hook has tips for those who normally find small talk and networking painful. And a Renaissance man dies while doing his love. The Hook, from classic to romantic. And support for NRN today is also coming from Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, now featuring the Columbia Omni Heat, a waterproof jacket with 700 fill power to provide protection from wet and cold weather. Columbia Omni Heat jackets are available at the Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, the outdoor store that knows the outdoors. All right, back with our guests, Tim Resch, Nuri Yingling, and Dr. Yvonne Chen. Nuri, I'm going to start with you, but this applies to everyone. Have you noticed, are there different types of personality with today's kids? Has the media done anything to change the personality of the children? They're rarely alone because they always have some form of connection. As Dr. Chen just mentioned, feeling strong about that connection, she put that up in a positive manner. But you're always sharing what you're doing, where you are. And has that changed the personality of the kids from 10 years ago, 20 years ago?
Well, that's such a great question. I've been in education for 25 years. I've been at Tandem for 22 years. So I think anything I notice about kids changing could much more be a result of my getting older than my own kids having grown up.
Elmo's 25, by the way, this week. We're talking about Sesame Street. Elmo turned 25. You want to feel old.
Oh, my God, I do. That's another thing that makes me feel old today. Have kids' personalities changed? You know, I believe, and I'm speaking for myself, not so much here as a spokesman for my dear school, that, you know, at Tandem, as a Quaker school, there are certain testimonies that we hold dear: simplicity, harmony, integrity, equality, community. We believe in the power of silence and silence as a place to go. And I've noticed that our students who initially have trouble settling into the 35, 40 minutes of meaningful worship, which is our silent time in the middle of the day on Wednesday, that many of those kids, once they graduate, they come back to visit the school, and they tend to come during the meeting for worship time. They come to sit quietly with folks who've replaced them, so to speak, at their school. I also know I was an English teacher for many years before I became an administrator, and I would take my students down to the river or sit outside or just lie down and look at the clouds, and that would be our activity. I gave a homework assignment last year to my American literature students about, and I said, your homework this weekend is to go outside and look at the stars for half an hour. Then later on, when, you know, they do evaluations, this, that, you know, this sort of, you know, how are we doing? What the kids remember are those kinds of activities. They remember relationships. They value our quiet time. I don't think at heart that kids have changed. I think that their hunger for relationship, connectivity, and I mean real connectivity. I don't want to disparage the connections of the virtual world, but I think they pale in comparison to real, in the moment, present relationships. I mean, they've done studies on empathy, and if our relationship, if our friends are people we don't even know who are on a screen, where and how do we begin to learn to respond to facial cues, to understand when silence is appropriate, to understand the power of, you know, reaching out and putting your hand on someone's hand. These are the kinds of questions and things I think about as a parent, as an educator, as an aging person, as far as what I think is of most value to kids. So kids changing, not deep down, but I think their hunger for, I would say, less time in front of screens is become a deeper hunger.
Tim Resch here, a parent of, and I believe you told me, 4 children, correct? Your oldest is 26, and the next is 16. So then you have a little grouping there of 16, 14, and 11. Could your 26-year-old 10 years ago have gone outside without complaint to lay down and look at the stars for 10 minutes, as opposed to your current 16 and 14-year-olds to do that tonight without having, and you said you can't take your phone with you or your iPad, iTunes, you just have to go outside and look at the stars. Would you have gotten complaint 10 years ago from that child as compared to the 16 and 14-year-old now?
I don't think so, because even 10 years ago when she was a teenager, the same age as my kids now, I didn't even have a cell phone. My wife didn't have a cell phone. They were certainly out there and available, but I think they were expensive, and we just didn't understand or didn't think there was a need to have one to be that connected. So my daughter, my oldest daughter, she actually just turned 27 a couple of weeks ago, I don't think she would have had any problem with going out and doing that, the quiet exercises that Nora's talking
about. But how
about
the ones today? Could they do that without complaint?
They probably would not. They'd probably want to take their phone with them. It's my wife has an excellent saying that she says nowadays the kids are technologically connected, but they're socially disconnected. Which sounds kind of odd because, you know, we've got all these social networking things that are connected. But if you go to our house now, you probably find all 3 kids on different computers or different TVs or different screens. It's a beautiful, you know, sunny day in Charlottesville. And on a typical day like this, if we don't get them out or doing something, and I have to admit, I'll do it too. I'll be catching up on work or something, and my wife might be catching up on work or something. So we're all 5 on different machines within the house, not connecting with each other within the house, but connecting outside. It's more of a externally looking than internally looking within the family.
Dr. Chen, and I guess that's where my question goes, Dr. Yvonne Chen from Virginia Tech, is that a way that the personalities have changed? If 10 years ago, because the cell phone wasn't ready and available for the family because of cost or perceived need, has the current child's personality and social capabilities changed because of that device?
I think that when you first talked about that technology article in the New York Times talking about growing up digital wired for distraction, I think the article brings out a very interesting point, is that human brains are indeed wired for instant gratification, and that, you know, multitasking, you know, continuously having TV in the background, having screen in front of us, and I think that really creates us to some extent to not having maybe shorter attention span. However, when it comes to personality and whether the personality has shifted, whether the social capacity has changed, I think more research still needs to be done to really establish that connection between growing up with digital and the impact of that on social capacity.
It is 11:50 here on the Wake Up Call as we talk about parenting and technology. Guest today, Neera Yingling, who's the upper school director from the local Tandem Friends School, Dr. Yvonne Chen, Virginia Tech Assistant Professor of Communication, who recently the two helped put together a seminar on From TV to Twitter and this topic, and Tim Resch also joining us as the parent of two teenagers and an 11-year-old having to deal with this on a daily basis. Let me take a moment and thank SugarSnap for allowing WNRN and the Wake Up Call to be on air today. They offer gently used baby and kids items, including hats and maternity clothing. Also at SugarSnap, you'll find cloth diapers and diaper bags and other locally made items. They have a kid-friendly play area that's available while you shop, and you can become a fan of SugarSnap on Facebook or Twitter. More at SugarSnapConsignment.com. You can find them at Shoppers World Court. And surprising me from behind me is Patrick Allen. No? Where'd Patrick Allen go? There he is. Patrick Allen is going to be doing Les Temps for Due in just a few moments. The best of 80s and 90s alternative, like the Ramones and Bangles, Psychedelic Furs, and they're brought to you in part by Orzo and the Visualite. And Patrick, he likes requests. Call up with requests on Les Temps for Due. All right, about 8 minutes left. It's approximately 11:52 on the Wake Up Call with our guests as we talk about parenting and technology. Neera, when I sent my original email out trying to put this program together, one of the things that I got back was a comment about how some schools do not allow any device with a headphone because the perceived problem is that even if you're not using your cell phone to talk or text, that the headphone, even if it's just playing music, takes you out of the social interaction.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, one of the responsibilities of any good school is to do everything that it can to make the kids want to be there, to make us all want to be there in a community. You know, in America, you know, the sort of the deep-rooted communities that that our parents and grandparents experience, you know, few of us have that opportunity. So schools, I think, have a responsibility to create community for their students. So that makes a lot of sense to me. You know, that said, I have worked with kids over the years who because of their learning style or for lots of different reasons, they need during periods of time to check out. We all check out. I mean, we don't need to have earphones on to not be present. You know, I think we all know that. But I do think that's one way that schools try to create community. And I've had colleagues in the past who will allow kids to listen to their iPod when they're taking a test or writing a paper. And again, I think those kinds of decisions made in the context of a conversation and relationship are the kinds of things that happen in really good schools. You know, I also want to make sure that I don't sound like a complete Luddite, because I'm thinking about the opportunities with media and with technology to do powerfully creative things. I think we all know that, you know, those of us who are really environmentally conscious or trying to be and aware of some of the biggest challenges we're facing as educators, as humans on the planet, about the environment, you know, to be able to send an email, to be able to, for example, Tandem right now is posting grades and comments digitally rather than sending out reams and reams of paper four times a year. Those are the ways in which the media and technology can serve, you know, a greater good. I know that there are a lot of schools, and certainly Friends schools, and they're the schools with whom I have the strongest communication, are, again, it's just talking together, thinking about the role that media can play in a healthy way towards kids' well-being and creativity and growth. And it's about, I would say, limiting use and about being really clear about what the particular uses are, and also to really begin asking more and more questions about what multitasking does and what we're not doing when we're Twittering or tweeting or emailing or IMing or Facebooking. What is it that we're not doing?
11:55. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. A few minutes left with our guests, Tim Resch, Neura Yingling, Dr. Yvonne Chen. Dr. Chen, I want to finish on the positive uses of these media devices and how things have changed in the last 10 years as I asked Tim a question about his kids going outside to look at the stars. Where are we going from here, and what do Neura at school and Tim at home need to do to drive the kids down the right side of the path?
I think that throughout our conversation, we talked about, you know, parents may choose to restrict their child's access to certain technology. Or like Tim, you know, he joined Facebook and he befriended with his children on Facebook so he can actually, I'm trying to avoid the use of monitor, but he could definitely, you know, pay attention to what kind of friends that his children are having and why, you know, his child has 300 friends, you know, and why you befriend certain people. And I think all of those are really good approaches. In addition to that, I feel like there is a need for us to really understand and to really talk to students about media. We really need to understand that what kind of media messages are children watching nowadays, and what kind of ideals or representations are being portrayed in the media, and how we can actually discern the omitted information from the media and, you know, and be empowered to be able to really differentiate whether this media message could be good for me or bad for me. And I think that by talking to children, for example, and I think I've done a lot of research in the area of advertising, by talking with children, for example, about what techniques are used to get our attention, what kind of persuasion tools are used in this particular programming to get my attention, who created this media messages and why, what is being omitted from this message, what's absent from this. And we can definitely see that a lot in advertising, is they will tell you how wonderful this particular item is, but it never tells you some other information about this product. And then also talk to children about whose point of view is presented in this particular media message. Why does Facebook want you to use this one? Why does Facebook recommend you to have privacy setting that says that everyone can see your profile? And I think that's a very interesting part when we take a look at Facebook, that a lot of time people say, well, to protect our privacy, you should only have friends. Allow your friends to see your profile. Whereas if you go to the Facebook privacy setting, for some pieces of information, they will recommend you that, you know what, you should share that to everyone. That means millions of users of Facebook could be able to access your personal information. And you need to understand, so why does the company want me to share my information to the rest of the world? And I think that having those kind of conversation is very, very important, because you are, for parents who only rely on restriction, you know, sometimes they might not be enough, because children may have access to Facebook or other kind of media when they're at their friend's house. So talking with them, empowering them, really are able to make a difference in children's life.
Dr. Chen, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Tim, quick last question for you. Are your kids listening, and are they going to be embarrassed when you get home?
I told them some of the stories I was going to say, but I didn't share all of those. So they're probably listening more in the defensive to make sure I'm not saying anything they don't want to be shared out there versus trying to learn something.
Well, best of luck to the Resch family, because
thank
I think that Dad might have learned a few things. I think you should take the phones and check to see who they're texting and how many times a day. So you can say that you got that from me, and then you can blame me. Neura Yingling from Tandem School, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thanks very much.
Next week, we will be doing a show on homeless with the executive director from The Haven in downtown Charlottesville. Please have a happy Thanksgiving, because as we'll find out next week, not everybody gets to do so.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.